All right, and we were back. That was what we should and should not eat. We're going to go now to our national headlines. However, we're joined once again by Leah Mazzolini.
Thanks, Darren. A recent survey by Insightrix Research, a Regina-based carbon capture and storage study center, revealed that 2% of Canadian respondents do not believe in climate change. The report released on Wednesday, August 15th, polled over 1,500 people online between May 29th and June 11th of this year. Insightrix CEO Carmen Dybwad said that response revealed the overwhelming majority of Canadians feel climate change is real. Additionally, the report revealed that 32% of Canadians believe climate change is the result of human activity, but 54% said it was a combination of natural climate variation and human activity. According to the poll, residents of British Columbia, Quebec, and Atlantic provinces were most likely to feel climate change is because of human activity. Vancouver Mayor Gregor Robertson announced the city has added 13 new electric cars, making it a total fleet of 16 on Wednesday, August 15th. The city paid approximately $30,000 for each vehicle, according to Peter Judd, the city's general manager of energy or engineering services. The city hopes the green vehicles will reduce the city's greenhouse gas emissions by 29,000 kilograms. Mayor Robertson also says they could save the city over $20,000 in fuel and maintenance costs annually. Vancouver is planning to increase the vehicle-friendly infrastructure by creating 67 charging stations in addition to its current six. Recharging can take between 30 minutes and 22 hours. Critics note a possible roadblock in that vehicles can only last up to 155 kilometers without needing a boost. But Mayor Robertson was confident that the distances driven in Vancouver tend to be short. And that's all for the national news. I'm Leah Mazzolini.
Thank you very much, Leah. We're going to be back in just a minute or two with Richard Lundgren from the Canadian Environment Law Association to talk about, among other things, the first victim of Harper's Bill C-38. However, we're going to take a quick music break and we'll be right back. Stay tuned. Right, we're back. I'm Darren Kaster. You're listening to The Green Majority. I believe I have Richard Lindgren from the Canadian Environment Law Association on the line. Are you there, Richard?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Thank you so much for taking the time to join us this morning. This is an ongoing major issue. We've been covering it recently on The Green Majority, and we're great to have someone from the CELA join us today to maybe break it down in a little bit more detail. The piece that caught my eye that made me decide to do another feature on it today was, of course, the Sierra Club Canada release about the Bill C-38's first victim. But why don't we start a little bit, before we jump into right what the current events is, if we could just maybe do an overview about exactly what is Bill C-38 and why should people who are interested in the environment be concerned?
Well, Bill C-38 is the federal budget bill that was passed by the Harper government a number of weeks ago. And it's a massive bill. It's hundreds and hundreds of pages. But one of the things it does is roll back a number of federal environmental protection laws, including the Fisheries Act, the Species at Risk Act, and perhaps most importantly, the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act. And in short, what Bill C-38 did was repeal the old environmental assessment law that we've had here in Canada for about the last 20 years, and it's worked pretty well. And basically replace it with a new regime that, which is far narrower and not very comprehensive and not very credible. So it's a significant step backwards.
So, I mean, one of the things that we might say as well, of course, environmentalists, of course, always have something to complain about, I guess, to a certain degree. So, I mean, I would say that to a point, environmentalists, you know, weren't entirely, let's say, perfectly happy. I think everyone would have agreed there was, even with the existing laws that have now been either streamlined or completely cut out, that there was room for improvement there. So the environmental community, well, maybe some of these rules that have just recently been removed, would say some of them weren't bad, maybe, and some of them were good, you know, well thought out laws. They certainly, if anything needed to be done, they could have been improved. So what I'm wondering is, what at least from your point of view, what was the government's reason for at least on the part that's affected by the environment, specifically having to do with the Review Act, what was their reason that, or their claim for their reason for why that this needed to be removed? Is this a money saving? Did they think they were ineffective? What was their excuse?
Well, let's call a spade in my view. The only rationale was to speed up approvals of major projects like oil pipelines and tar sands developments and the Northern Gateway project, etc. You know, I think the people who now have the reins of power in Ottawa perceive environmental assessment as just mere red tape that's standing in the way of jobs and economic growth and so forth. So to their mind, the best way to, you know, get around it is to repeal it and put in place, you know, a much more narrow set of rules that really don't protect the environment or safeguard the public interest.
So in your opinion, was there any real attempt to sort of justify it at all, or did they just really kind of go, yeah, all right, this is what's going on now, too bad?
Well, here's what's puzzling. The Canadian Environmental Assessment Act, as I mentioned, has been in force since the mid-1990s. And it's been periodically reviewed by the Standing Committee on Environment and Sustainable Development. And a number of incremental reforms have been reviewed, and some of them have actually even been implemented. And even a few months ago, the most recent review was conducted. In fact, I went to Ottawa and spoke to the Standing Committee. And I think there was a consensus that there was room for improvement. There were things that could be fixed to make it more timely, more predictable, and so forth. And so a number of parties had identified some changes that should be brought forward, and the Standing Committee considered some of these changes and issued a report which adopted some changes but not others. But nowhere in the Standing Committee's report did it call for the wholesale repeal or abolition of the existing law. Nevertheless, mere weeks after the release of the report, that's exactly what the Harper government did.
Okay, and so I mean the theme here. Before we just jump right into what this most recent, as the press release says, the first victim, as it were. Before we just jump right into the details of that, specifically, I mean, there seems to be the theme here, which is, I mean, I'm very, very adverse to getting into anything that feels like any sort of conspiracy theory. I'm not interested in you know, wild conspiracies or anything like that. But it's really hard as a rational thinking person who reads the news on a regular basis to not see this as just an outright blatant, no, they're not even trying to hide it, attack on public input and by thereby extension democracy in Canada. I mean, it feels like an extreme thing to say, but I'm really having a lot of trouble seeing any other way to look at it.
Well, you know, I tend to share that view because these very, very significant changes were buried in a budget bill. I mean, if you want to have an open, democratic, you know, fulsome debate on environmental assessment, you know, introduce the standalone bill and, you know, let's have that, you know, the argument. Let's have a proper parliamentary process so the pros and cons of the proposed changes can be fully assessed and identified, and then we move forward. But that's not what happened here. You know, budget bills, particularly those produced by a majority government, tend to get, you know, short shrift. They get expedited through the process, and there's not much time or room for debate. So these are very, very significant changes, and I see them as nothing less than an attack on Canadian core values and Canadian democracy as we know it.
All right. So getting right into the specific issue here, talking about our first victim, this is with reference to shipping nuclear waste through the Great Lakes system. Do you want to talk a little bit about just exactly what this court case that yourself, that Sierra Club and had to withdraw having to do with this? They lost. What exactly happened? That the KCOS was lost, or it was withdrawn, or what actually was the event?
Okay, well, just to back up a step, you'll probably recall that a couple of years ago, the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission issued two permits to Bruce Power to allow Bruce Power to take these radioactive steam generators that were decommissioned at the Bruce Station as part of the refurbishment, and the permits purported to allow Bruce Power to take these decommissioned steam generators out of storage, move them down the road to Owen Sound, put them on a vessel, have the vessel go through the lower Great Lakes and the St. Lawrence Seaway over to Sweden. The idea was that these contaminated metals would be melted down. The less contaminated metals would be recovered and perhaps melted into ingots and sold on the world metal market. And then the contaminated residue would be shipped back to Canada and back up to the Bruce site for permanent storage. So that's what the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission approved in the two permits, the transport and the export of this radioactive material. The problem is that no environmental assessment was conducted prior to the issuance of the permits, and that's what prompted Sierra Club Canada and the Canadian Environmental Law Association to go to court. So basically we're asking the federal court to strike down the permits on the grounds that the required environmental assessment was not conducted.
And then now, because of Bill C-38, there's basically no opportunity to, there's basically no recourse on this. Is that, am I reading that wrong?
Well, you see, what happened was we were asking the court to enforce the old Canadian Environmental Assessment Act. There are certain provisions in it that we were relying upon to make the argument that there should have been an environmental assessment of this very significant activity. The problem is Bill C-38 repealed that law in its entirety, so there was nothing left for the court to decide, or nothing left for the court to interpret. And in the meantime, the permits expired anyways. They were only good for a year, and they expired. So at about 2 days ago, we filed notices of discontinuance with the federal court. The whole thing has been rendered moot by the passage of the new law, which definitely does not apply to this kind of activity.
Okay, so and let's be clear about exactly what it is that we're talking about. When you're saying there was no environmental assessment performed, I mean, is that should that be taken literally? Was there literally no, at any point, consideration taken for possible environmental damage, or is this just that like some official process wasn't found, but there was research done? Like, how much consideration of the environment was taken at all in this case?
Okay, prior to the issuance of the two permits, the Canadian Nuclear Safety Commission conducted a two-day public hearing because there are a number of groups and individuals, First Nations, municipalities, others who are quite concerned about this prospect. So a two-day hearing was convened in Ottawa, and people brought forward their, you know, factual and technical and scientific concerns about environmental risks and health risks, et cetera. Of course, all of the interveners who participated in that hearing were limited to 10 minutes each, so it's hard to really explain all the concerns on this you know, highly complex matter in about 10 minutes. But in any event, the commission listened to the evidence and then issued the permit anyways. That was the transport permit. The export permit was actually issued behind closed doors. There was no hearing whatsoever. And so that's a concern that our groups had. You know, there is a permitting process that the commission carries out. If you were talking to a commission representative, they would tell you, well, of course we take environmental considerations into account, but it's not an environmental assessment process. It's a permitting process. And that's why we went to court to say, you know, commission, you know, if you think that this is such a good idea and if you fully identify and mitigate the environmental risk, then prove it in an environmental assessment process. That's why we have one, but that never happened.
And so, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, a lot of, when you're talking about policy and bills and all these sorts of things, like people that aren't necessarily academic on the subject, I'm certainly only, you know, sort of tangentially educated on how all this sort of stuff works. I mean, there's a lot of language that gets thrown around, and I think the issue can easily become very confusing. But I mean, am I misreading the situation to almost say that, I mean, the industry, in this case, Bruce Power and the powers that be, that, you know, people that stand to that want this project to go through, essentially they've had an opportunity to have hearings for months. I mean, they essentially are able to lobby the government. They work on these plans. They go through all the details. So it's not a matter of, you know, the pros and cons are all issued in these meetings and everyone gets 10 minutes. Am I wrong to sort of put it in the context that, you know, the people that want the projects like this to go through essentially get months and months and months of the government's time to say why they should do it, and then you get sort of 5 minutes to respond at the end? Is that a wrong way to read this?
No, that's a fair assessment. There's lots of ongoing dialogue between commission staff and representatives of the proponent that go on behind closed doors. So it's a question of accessibility, and it's a question of, you know, meaningful public participation. You know, we want a meaningful say. In my view, we didn't get it in the limited commission process that we had on the one permit. And that's another reason why we thought we need environmental assessment. Environmental assessment is all about ensuring that interested folks, interested groups, and individuals have a meaningful opportunity to get into the decision-making process and influence the outcome. And that's why we went to court to try to make sure that an environmental assessment was conducted in this case.
And I mean, that seems to sort of almost be an admitted point that that the government, in a general sense, understands that this sort of issue can't possibly be reasonably or rationally decided on any issue within this particular case or any other case in a 10-minute presentation because of the simple fact that they do give access to the pro side, if you will, for months and months. They seem to understand that it takes months and months to really work out all the details. So there seems to almost be an implied admission that they know that there's really no, say, you know, rational case that can be built in the amount of time that they give the public to put in their two cents on these issues.
Well, you know, I keep thinking about my experiences in court, you know, when we're prosecuting polluters or if we're seeking compensation for victims of pollution. Courts don't impose time limits like that. I mean, you need the time to properly present a fulsome case and respond to the case being put forward to the other side. So we don't get 10-minute limits in court. And that being the case, why would we, you know, stand by and idly accept 10-minute limits imposed by a regulatory agency on matters of profound public interest? It just makes no sense to me.
Well, and I think as well, if you flip it the other way around, we could say, well, maybe it would be fair if Bruce Power only got 10 minutes of the government's time, but the government would freely admit that they would have no way of possibly making a decision with only 10 minutes of Bruce Power's time.
I would certainly support that initiative, but I don't see it happening.
Okay, so where do we go from here? I mean, is this game over and there's nothing we can do here? Or, I mean, where do we go forward with working within the now enacted Bill C-38?
Okay, well, I can think of two things. Number one, as I mentioned earlier, the permits in question have both expired, so really the ball's in Bruce Power's court. And if they want to resurrect this export plan, then they have to reapply for permits. So we all need to be very watchful. We have to, you know, closely scrutinize what Bruce Power is applying for and what they're proposing to do, and again, make all kinds of kicking and screaming noises at the commission when this lands there. That's the first thing to do. But stepping back, as I mentioned earlier, the Canadian Environmental Assessment Act, the new version that just got introduced by the Tories, does not apply to this activity. And the reason I say that is that there's a new regulation under the Act that specifies the small list of major projects that will trigger an environmental assessment moving forward. So things like big mines and oil and gas and, you know, pipelines, that will trigger environmental assessment. But the physical act of shipping or exporting large amounts of radioactive waste, it's not on the projects list. And so I think it behooves all of us who are concerned about that to start lobbying the government to make sure that the regulation is amended to include this kind of activity. And ironically enough, the Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency, which is the federal agency which administers the EA law, is now actually soliciting public comment on potential additions to the list. And that public comment period actually ends next Friday on August 24th. So if you or your listeners have some concerns about the exclusion of hazardous waste, or sorry, radioactive waste shipments, then the time is now to tell the agency, yes, the list should be amended to include this kind of activity.
And is there somewhere that either the Canadian Environmental Law Association or Sierra Club of Canada have more resources where the people can go to look up information on here, or perhaps sign a letter or something like that that's for more information?
Probably the best place to go is a website called EnviroLawsMatter, all one word, .ca. And that's a collection of materials on the recent environmental assessment reforms and outlines the concerns that we all have and the amendments to the regulations that need to be implemented. So that's probably a good starting point. We, of course, at the Canadian Environmental Law Association have also written and lobbied extensively on this issue. So if you go to CELA.ca, I'm sure you'll find some more material. And if that doesn't work, track me down.
Absolutely. And so just closing up here, we've only got a minute or two left. I just wanted to ask you, if just kind of going forward now, I mean, we've got the Bruce Power issue is one issue that people should be very interested in about, especially when we're talking about Great Lakes and radioactivity sound is something that's very important. But in a more broad sense, of course, you have both UN's Canadian Environmental Law Association and Sierra Club of Canada. This is one of many, many issues that they're tracking. Is there anything else, any other cases, for instance, that are either in court right now or you're looking to have heard by a court coming up that you feel may also be affected by this that people should be concerned about?
Yeah, well, there's a number of things in play if we're just confining ourselves to the nuclear front. First of all, we have another court case underway challenging the proposal to build new reactors at Darlington. So we've got a federal court case that's trying to set aside the environmental assessment that was conducted in relation to that proposal. At the same time, the Ontario Power Generation is proposing to extend the life of the existing reactors at Darlington. So that's now triggered another federal environmental assessment. So that's underway, and people can get involved in that. And the final thing I should probably mention is the ongoing federal environmental assessment for the Deep Geological Repository, which is being proposed next door to the Bruce Nuclear Site. And the idea is they want to build a series of underground caverns on the Lake Huron shore to basically store low and intermediate waste, radioactive waste, for literally hundreds of thousands of years. So there's no shortage of work to do.
And that's just confining ourselves to the nuclear issues, regardless of the other 47,000 other issues that we could possibly talk about today.
Exactly.
We might need a 400-hour long show to deal with those, so maybe we'll have you back on the program another time to get into some of that stuff. For now, I believe you said the website on this specific issue and or similar issues was EnviroLawsMatter.ca, is that right?
That's correct.
Okay, and of course, anyone who's interested can look up the Sierra Club of Canada or the Canadian Environmental Law Association for more information. Richard Lindgren, thank you so much for joining us on the Green Majority today.
Well, thank you, Darren. My pleasure.